I mean, so what I was going to ask first really was about whether you had any recollections of what your perception was of these debates generally in this period in the 1970s. I know you started on this society in, what, 77?
Something like that.
But did you have a more general perception of?
Well, I knew History Workshop because I'd been at Oxford and as an undergraduate, and I knew Raphael Samuel when I was an undergraduate. I can't remember whether I was there for the very first History Workshop, though I have a feeling I may have been, and I was certainly there for some of the early ones before this one. And I knew quite a lot of the people who were in on the ground, like Alan Hawkins and Dave Douglas and Sally Alexander and people like that. So I was familiar with the milieu of Ruskin and the History Workshop in its early days.
Did it affect your, was it an impact on your politics or your kind of intellectual
interest? It was a reflection of my politics rather than anything else. I did history as an undergraduate at Balliol College between 1968 and 71. And I got to, you know, I come from a communist background myself. My father was a prominent communist, so I was, you know, I mean, I knew what Marxism was when I was seven at some level, rather than I knew about the Communist Party when I was at junior school, so that's unusual, that's part of my, you know, that's where I come from. It's in my DNA. So History Workshop wasn't something that I kind of discovered in that sense. It was a reflection of what I was in, of what I was interested in. And I think I've been trying to remember this. I think I wanted to go to this particular History Workshop because I think I suggested it. Although Raphael had connections with New Society, he wrote in New Society from time to time, and he would have known some of the other people who edited New Society. But I think that I knew it was going to be quite a sort of pivotal occasion, and that therefore it would be quite good thing to report on.
Was it something, because obviously it was an academic conference, but
yeah.
So nowadays the thought of a mainstream magazine reporting on an academic conference is happen so often.
Yeah, except that history, I may be wrong about this, but at that period, what you can loosely call socialist history, you know, had a considerable following, and history is always quite an easy thing to write about. Look at how it's easy to sell a story, easy to pitch it. Look at the preponderance of stories about the history curriculum in the Gove reforms. It's an easier handle for the general reader than talking about, you know, how you cover chemistry.
So these debates
have a kind of wider resonance. For the kind of readership that we had on New Society, you know, which was quite academic, quite leftish, not dogmatically so, and public sector. So I suppose, you know, and of its, and particularly the involvement of Edward in it.
Thompson.
Yes, yeah. Because he was he was a huge star, that gave it extra appeal, I would say. I mean, to me, Edward was the central figure of that weekend.
What are your memories of it? I mean, just generally, what are your memories of that weekend in Ruskin? I mean, the atmosphere over the course of a couple of days?
I must have been to more sessions than just the big one when they had this big debate, and I must have floated around and talked to Raphael once or twice, but this was the central thing, and it was on a evening, and it was cold, and it was in a hall which was highly dramatic because it was an old church, and it had a very big, noisy blow heater, huge thing, like sort of, that would heat a stadium. So people were very sort of wrapped up in lots of heavy outer clothes and everything like that. So it was all quite kind of dramatic. It felt a bit like something out of, I don't know, Dr. Zhivago or something like that. The reason why, I mean, I wasn't particularly up in the academic debates. I knew about Althusser. I had read with difficulty some Althusser, and I can't now remember, you would know because you're studying it, that whether Edward had already written.
I think so.
I think he probably had written it. Whether it was an art, whether it was article, whether the book was out, or whether it was some, you know, whether he'd written articles which went into making that book. I think it was very much centered around him, as I recall it. He appeared at history workshops periodically. He was a feature of the history workshop things. It wasn't unprecedented that someone of his fame and eminence, and you know, he had unique fame and eminence because of the making of the English working class. And you know, which was in a sense the kind of Bible of the history workshop, in a way. I mean. And I think, I don't think he spoke first, but you would know.
He spoke last, actually.
I think he might have been Paul Johnson.
I think that's right.
And I mean, he was such a brilliant performer. He was an exceptional performer, and at this distance of time, I can't remember the things that he said other than the things I wrote down in the article that he said. But I mean,
did you have an impression of like who came out on top in terms of those?
I was very sympathetic to him. I would still be. I still am. I mean, I'm not involved in these debates. I'm not an academic, but it seems to me that the capture of it, which is how he used to talk about it, the kind of capture of Marxist history and left-wing history by a kind of by theoreticians rather than bottom-up archivists and so on, was a terrible thing. And actually, I think it captured, and maybe has still captured, I don't know, you'd have to tell me, Marxist historiography. So that, I mean, I mean, what I thought then, and it's hard to differentiate from what I thought then from what I think now. I mean, it just seemed to me that there was at some point in the late 20th century, the professional academic Marxist invented, refined and developed a way of talking about history which excluded everyone other than themselves. So as it became an introspective, introverted set of arguments, not unimportant, but the argument of a priesthood rather than the argument of the laity, And you know, it seemed to me that that was, I was very, I mean, I don't pretend to any importance in this, and I have none whatsoever. But, you know, I mean, my, you know, I was, you know, Edward spoke for me, it seemed to me, and he gave, I remember feeling that he gave me confidence to have a view about these things. Because, you know, I'm of the generation, you know, which rather revered New Left Review and, you know, was impressionable about the, about currents in mid-20th century Marxism, and was sort of, you know, didn't want to, and, you know, was dissatisfied with, you know, the sclerotic communist tradition, and the Soviet tradition, so was kind of open to new thinking, but was kind of, but felt kind of intimidated by it. And I mean, I felt, I mean, that was, to be honest, I've barely read New Left Review for the last 30 or 40 years, not because I'm not in, at some level, quite interested. But it always seemed to me that at that period it just became so preoccupied with a kind of, with a theoretical preoccupation, that it was really quite difficult.
Going back to the debate, was there kind of how important was the difference in styles between the speakers? In terms of Stuart or Richard Johnson and Nicky Thompson, was there a different way of approaching
Edward
the debate?
Made people laugh. And people applauded what he said as he went along sometimes, as I recall it. But as I wrote in the article, you know, this came on top of an already developing and quite deep sense of resentment by the Ruskin students that their event had somehow been taken away from them by, you know, people who only spoke in theory rather than talked about, you know, wages and hours and conditions and work and, well, gender, because there was a feminine. I mean, I think I'm right in saying, you may know, that actually the first women's liberation conference, which I think was at Ruskin in about 68, had some kind of connection with History Workshop.
But it's all, I think it's all in
vestigiously. Yeah. Vestigially. And I mean, that may have been to do with Anna Davin and Sheila Rowbotham knowing and being part of the sort of late 50s undergraduate school, of which Raphael was such a kind of charismatic part. And I think that in a way, I mean, whilst Raphael himself was well able to take part in high theory, in debates of high theory, I think he felt quite uncomfortable about this tension between, you know, the proletariat who wanted to talk about mining and work and trade unionism and this sort of post-Robbins revolution academic Marxist tradition, which was I think very much associated with whatever they were called, the School of
Contemporary Studies.
Yeah, Center for Contemporary Studies in Birmingham. And Stuart Hall. I found Stuart Hall struck me then, as he would still strike me now if I, because as somebody who bridged those two things quite ably, and again, was very charismatic. But I was, I mean, I have always to this day found Stuart quite difficult to understand. In a way that was not true of Edward or the Communist Party generation that Edward and my father and Christopher Hill and even Eric Hobsbawm and many others that I knew as a young person were part of. And I think one of the things which their generation put a premium on was being able to express Marxism in a clear and undogmatic way to working class people, to labour. And I think they were quite good at that, you know. I mean, if you look at Christopher Hill's writings in the 40s and 50s or Edwards, they are
accessible,
very accessible, very well, in my view, very well written. You know, I think that is actually an absolute, you know, and I think it goes in, you know, in journalism, I think it's incredibly important to be clear, so that people who don't know about what you're writing about learn something from it. It's very, you know, I mean, I know this is the stuff of 50 years of debate in Birmingham and other places, but I mean, you know, I think clarity and in the use of language and accessibility.
Was Johnson's presentation slightly?
I remember it as being more impenetrable.
He was reading, wasn't he, from the script, whereas the other two, I believe, were...
Is that what I say? I don't remember. I didn't know of him.
Right.
He was, you know, he was not somebody I was aware of beforehand. But I think Raphael was really... I think probably Raphael was the person who was most keen I should come and write about it and do a feature in New Society. I'm pretty sure that was the case. But I think, as I said in the piece, Raphael was kind of almost neuralgically opposed to the cult of the personality. And although he was a highly charismatic person, you never came across him, did you?
No, not personally.
I can't remember when he died. In the 90s, probably too young. But I mean, he was a very charismatic and unusual person. Incredibly so. A unique and an unrepeatable figure. Do you know Bill Schwartz?
Yeah, I'm interviewing Bill Schwartz.
Yeah, because he would know quite a lot of. I don't know if he was there.
He was at Birmingham with Stuart and Richard.
Yes, I don't know if he was at the Oxford thing, but he became very involved with History Workshop and with Raphael.
I think he was quite an important bridge actually between the two kind of schools in a sense.
Yeah.
Do you have I don't want to keep you too long, but do you have a sense of, because obviously that debate took place in 79, you know, Thatcher was elected in 79, and looking back at that, do you see that and what's gone on subsequently, politically and socially in Britain, do you have a sense of 79 being quite an important turning point, and do you relate, you know, the election of Thatcher and this debate, do they stand out for you as being turning points, or was the debate something that looking back on it was a bit more... slightly academic.
I would say that I would find it difficult to connect the two things in my own mind. I mean, clearly, 1979 politically was an important turning point because, you know, that was the beginning of Thatcher. I think that that debate was part of the disintegration and slow death of Labourism, and one manifestation of that. I don't want to get into using pseudo-academic words, but that kind of, the kind of appropriation of labour history by theoreticians, if that's what then happened, would seem to me to be part of that. And that's, you know, and I think you could certainly link that to the crisis in the labour movement, which of course was already well underway before 1979. And the more I look back on it, the more it seems to me that the critical moments when were, you know, the failure of the unions to rethink what their role might be in the context of the Bullock Report, which is a forgotten event now, but in retrospect has always seemed to me incredibly significant, the dismissal of the Bullock Report. And I think, that sort of workerism that was quite a feature of the History Workshop has gone now, really. And also that working class experience that underpinned Ruskin at that period has probably changed a lot. I mean, I haven't been involved with Ruskin. I haven't been to Ruskin for yonks, and I don't know what it's like there now. I have a feeling it's even moved, hasn't it? I don't think it's where it was in Walton Street. But I think that's been a big change. Is David Selborne still around?
I don't know the name.
Well, he was a very troubled politics tutor.
Right. In Oxford.
At Ruskin.
Right.
Contemporary of Raphael's. He became very hostile to what you could loosely call the hard left.
Mm.
And he started writing books about communitarianism and freedom of the individual and all that sort of thing. And he kind of, I don't know what's happened to him, he went to live in Italy at some point in the 1980s. He was a really interesting, troubled figure. They tried to sack him at Ruskin. And it became an issue because my memory is that quite a lot of the students disapproved of his critiques of the labour movement.
Right, okay. I have to look into it.
So he'd be part of that kind of fracturing
of that left kind of moment.
Classic Ruskin College labour movement.
The labour movement, the trade unions, but also which began to fracture in this period, but also the intellectual left was all that in a sense that debate that you went to and wrote about was also an example of that fracturing too, because it was this empirical history versus theoretical, the role of theory.
Yeah.
So in a sense, that's where the link might be, I guess, with the fracturing. The left was fracturing intellectually, but also fracturing in terms of the labour movement.
Yes, it has never recovered. It certainly has never recovered. It never will recover, in my opinion. Whatever form popular institutions and organisations take, it's not going to be the form of the 19th and early 20th century trade union movement. And because that whole nature of work has changed, never to be replaced. And unfortunately, there are too many people who would like it. Who think that it can somehow be recreated. And I think that's I view that as a tragedy rather than as something wicked, but I think it's very sad that the unions are as unimportant in British society as they are. But to be important, they have to rethink what they're there to do, and that's why I think that workplace democracy and so on is the way that could still even now be very relevant, especially post the crash.
Mm.
But
thanks very much for your time, and there's more pressing issues to